All right, what about now, everybody? Hello, hello.
Yep, sounds good, guys.
All right. So what we're going to do, sorry about the delay, everybody.
So what we're going to do, sorry about the delay, everybody. So what we're going to do, sorry about the delay, everybody.
We had a little bit of a hang up. Trev is unavailable, so we kind of had to improvise, but we wanted to be sure to bring you Chris and Cliff tonight. So Cliff is standing by patiently. He's ready to do the broadcast. Cliff, are you there?
I'm here, ready to go.
Thanks very much for joining us this evening, Cliff, under all these anomalies that are happening, and you know, the floor is yours.
Okay, that's fine. We're sure we're going out live now, and everybody's connected, huh?
Yes, everybody in chat seems to be hearing you just fine.
Okay, good deal. Well, why don't we start with our October 25th stuff, and then in the meantime, you guys can get some questions, and we'll go from there.
Sounds good. Sounds great.
Okay, the October 25th turn into building tension language is strengthened in the last time we've done our data run.
Right.
And at the moment, it appears that the early indicators are for the dollar to be the center of the focus, because we had our little preview, so to speak, between the 10th and the 15th, which we think, I mean, there were two separate streams there, but basically we think that it's going to resolve around the dollar being rejected as the global reserve currency.
That's
which correct. is going to start causing all of our problems here. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, nothing.
Anyway, the rejection of the currency is going to cause issues for us, because it'll start, should bring in inflation right away. The curious part for us was that I didn't expect to see the language around the loss as reserve status until November. So it probably means it's going to hit us with a harder level of impact than I'd anticipated.
Yeah. Now, one thing I want to cover tonight, Cliff, is actually there's a couple things that really interest me. One thing is, we want to know a little bit about the revolutionary changes that are coming. You know, that I think that's on a lot of people's mind. There's this feeling out there that there's definitely some kind of revolution brewing, some kind of uprising. And
Let's call it transformation, because we just don't know what form it'll take just yet.
Okay. And also, I don't know, I saw it in chat earlier. I'd like to know a little bit more about the 15% as well.
Sure.
So I'll just let you take that.
Well, yeah, let's start with the 15% business. It may there's a meme out there that humans are not 100% native DNA to the planet. We've been mucked about. There's even evidence to support that if anybody ever runs their own DNA through a the process, which is you zap it with electricity and get this spread, you can actually see that we all have genetic markers, as though we had spliced our DNA. So this meme is out there, and it may be factual. And the meme basically says that there's some 15% of the planet's populace of humans, regardless of race, has a high level, let's put it that way, of alien or extraterrestrial DNA in there. Now, my issue with that is that I've seen a lot of stuff in the data stream that feeds the powers that be entity, and I note that they're in the process of retooling their propaganda. And one of the things they're doing in the retooling of the propaganda is to increase this whole divide and conquer business. And one of the streams they'll use for that is this claim that 15% of the populace is indeed not space alien necessary, but carries extra stuff in their DNA, which will make them special, and it's simply a divide and conquer technique as far as the powers that be are concerned. That it may be factual is neither here nor there. But later on, what they wanted to do, and I don't know that they'll succeed or not, but they want to be able to say, well, okay, this group of 15%ers should come on over and basically join their group, because they also have a high degree of alien DNA. Am I coming through? We're getting some feedback here.
I'm hearing you good here. What about everybody out there in chat? If you can hear okay, just give me an affirmative. All right. Seems like everybody's nice and clear out there.
Okay, cool.
What we're going to do, guys, is we're just going to let Cliff give us some updates here about stuff that he thinks is important. And let's hold off on the questions for just a minute. And we'll get to that here in a moment. And then we'll start feeding the questions through to Cliff. Is that okay with everybody?
Sounds good for me.
All right. So, Cliff, go ahead and take it. And I'm seeing stuff here also about the dollar. It seems that they're pretty interested about that as well.
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting because it's truly an issue of confidence. And once confidence starts to go, it erodes. And then it continues to erode until there's like a critical mass. And then it will turn on you all of a sudden. If we go and we analyze various currency crashes of the past or currency devaluations, official, you know, like in the time they swapped the old franc for the new franc in France in the early 60s, we see that the confidence issue really is the key element. And when the French lost value or lost faith in the confidence of the franc during the swap, it was like 1 for 5 or something like this. But in that process of that swapping of currency, you're treated to a new sheet of paper. There, you don't have any confidence in it. Everything seems shaky at that time because here you've just lost, you know, nominally 4/5 of your investments or wealth.
Yeah.
And the issue for us is going to be with the dollar being rejected as a global reserve, how fast will the confidence erode within the U.S. to the point that we all just decide we're not going to deal with the Federal Reserve anymore and we'll take up some other form of interpersonal currency kind of a deal for our personal transactions. And I'm unsure as to the speed now as to how fast that'll go. Initially, I thought it would take almost a whole year. And I'd seen this sort of progression of around the early part of November, we would see the first of the language appear about the lack of or the rejection of the dollar as the reserve currency, and then maybe by December it would grow a little bit and move on into January, February before we had any real currency crisis here in the U.S. However, we're seeing that language about rejecting the dollar now before the
yes.
turn of the language, and so it really suggests that maybe we'll have a major currency crisis here on October 25th or shortly thereafter that will hold our attention for 10 or 15 days. Now, or actually, it's like 10.5 or some 10 and a half days. And here's an issue. Georgia, you and I discuss things like this all the time and try and argue and discuss our monkey mind issues relative to the larger archetypes. And so we know we've got a building tension language period coming that's going to last 10 and a half days and then go into this crocodile teeth with lots of release language and so on. And one of the things we constantly wonder ourselves is, okay, what could cause that? And he was saying, blah, 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 terrorist attack. And I would say, no, because the issue is that if the terrorist attack, it'd be release language thereafter immediately. And we don't have that. So in other words, we don't have a little spike of building tension and then a release language and then a big upsweep of building tension that would say maybe a terrorist attack might be at the root of it. And I proffered to him another alternative, which might be that, well, you could sort of imagine a terrorist attack causing building tension language if, for instance, the terrorists came and took a bunch of hostages and then it took 10 and a half days for all this stuff to resolve.
Mm-hmm.
If that were the case, then all right, that sort of makes sense as a building tension issue. But we don't really have anything that would suggest that. But one thing we do have is all this language around the dollar. And globally, there's a lot of language around their particular individual country's particular view of what's going to happen to them when the dollar goes.
Yes.
So we may indeed be looking at a major currency crisis that develops and, in essence, holds us all hostage through those 10 and a half days.
So definitely a global event, not just specific to the United States.
That's quite correct. Usually when we do these charts and stuff and we do release language, we're doing a sum on the emotion duration and impact of the emotions in all the entities, including global pop. So it is always a planetary kind of a view. And we have a situation here where we're quite sure that the dollar is going to have a planetary level of impact. And so it's going to be interesting to say the least. Now, one last thing about the dollar element here is that if the currency crashes or runs into a crisis, we might indeed see ancillary problems like bank holidays and so on,
yeah.
or whatever they're going to call them. We still have language building under our lockdown archetype relative to the global currency system. So it wouldn't surprise me that something fairly dramatic might happen over that weekend of the 24th and 25th, such that by the time that the release language shifts into building tension late on the night of the 25th, it sort of begins with the Asian markets.
Yes.
Because our time on that is about, I think, last I looked, it was about 2 or 3 in the morning, Pacific time, was when the actual shift into the building tension language occurs. And that would be coincident with the Asian markets getting moving, and if it is to be a currency issue, I would expect, as on most of our currency issues of the past, say, 30 years, have originated out of the Southeast Asian markets, you know, the Thai baht and other currency problems.
Well, so how would we prepare or brace for this financial collapse that's imminent? I mean, do you have any suggestions?
You need to get any assets you have in terms of a nominal or a notional wealth, that is to say, any digital dollars you've got, any reserves, that kind of a way, into something that is solid for you and is of a value. Because basically what is likely to happen is that, well, what is certain to happen and is that we'll have a confidence crash in the dollar.
Yes.
Now, beyond that, we don't have certainty as to when it will happen, but because we know that the confidence crash will occur, at some point, the paper dollar that you have in your hand now, in your wallet, is going to be worthless down to a point of zero. And that will also be true of all of the digital dollars. So if you had a lot of digital dollars, I don't know what you would do. But
well,
for regular humans like us with little digital dollars, it makes sense to invest in things like food and other supplies.
That's all tied into the same system, the digital versus paper currency, pretty much. It's all controlled at the same source.
Well, actually, yes, in a broad sense. However, we also have to acknowledge that there's an actual problem with our paper currency system, it is intruding into the larger digital system in the sense that there's so many counterfeit $100 bills out there that they're simply not accepted in international trade anymore. Now, it's less of an issue now because the confidence in the dollar has shredded to the point where you could, for instance, not use a dollar in Europe. And, you know, in 1994, you could hand over a dollar and they would take it no problem at all. In 2004, there were maybe a few countries that were starting to get real serious about only taking euros, and now no one will accept the dollar in normal cross-counter kind of trades. That is to say, you know, buying stuff on a street or going into a store. Same thing is true of India. In the early 90s, you could use dollars throughout the country, and now you have to do it in local currency only. So the confidence rejection on that is going to cause real problems for us here in the U.S., and our only issue is, will we be caught by surprise as it occurs suddenly, or will it be a gradual sort of thing building up to a point that we'll all be able to see, oh yes, next week sometime or the week thereafter, it'll just get so bad that, you know, things will collapse.
Yeah.
It's going to be dependent, I think, on how the political minions and the others nominally in charge in the U.S. decide they want to play out the crises. So the issue for us will be, is just sitting here, you know, not being involved in the political process or any of that, will be how the powers that be at a local political minion level, Obama on downward, will react to the unraveling of the confidence in the dollar. Will they be in a deer in the headlights mode, you know, running around flapping their gums, absolutely useless, or will there be some attempt to steer it into a longer degradation and not allow it to happen quickly?
Yes.
If it's going to happen quickly, we may indeed get into the position of the shutdown of the banks. Now, what's really curious, of course, in our lockdown language, bear in mind that our predictions are that certain language will appear in the mainstream press. And then from that, we infer that the language is going to be written about events, and so we make predictions about events. Mm-hmm. So we're making a prediction or a forecast that the dollar's in trouble and that there's going to be some crises here, and that some of the crises will involve the language of lockdown, which is our highest level of archetype relating to the 1025 and onward problems with the dollar.
Yes.
And the curious part right now is that over the past few days, more and more banks are reporting in essence, voluntary shutdowns coincident with our 1025 period onward. In other words, I've seen a half a dozen people have sent me notices that they've received from their banks that for whatever reason, from the 26th until the 31st or something, they're going to be redoing their computer systems, and you may have issues getting at your account, and they're giving you a heads up on that.
Yeah.
I've never received anything like that from any of my banks, so that alone is suspicious. But beyond that, just the sheer number of those showing up is starting to make an impact on the language. So we're starting to see some of the maturation of the lockdown language, even in advance of the event itself, even during this period of the release language. Make sense?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's pretty apparent to most people, I think, that something definitely is in the works. The dollar is almost worthless these days. I've even been reading reports that some of the oil-producing countries are not wanting to accept our dollars anymore as far as a trade currency for oil. So basically what I'm getting is that that's going to leave us at a place with gold and silver, and I've also seen questions coming through about the gold and silver. I mean, how much value will it have? Will we end up having to go into kind of a barter and trade system of operation?
Probably both are true, that there will be a lot of value in gold and silver, but basically it'll be at a barter or a trade system level. I suspect everything will degrade down to some form of, let's call it, a gray market. Mm-hmm. That is probably going to be similar to the Argentine experience. And you're quite correct about the oil-producing countries not wanting to accept the dollar. And it's not really an issue of wanting to accept. We have to really be careful about that, because that may be true of, like, any of the members of the King Saud family in Saudi Arabia, what we call Saudi Arabia. But we have to realize that they, to a certain extent, were coerced a while back, say 30 or 40 years ago, even longer than that, 50, 60 years ago, into accepting the dollar as the currency for which oil could be sold. There was this deal made with King Saud way back when that he would only sell oil and petrodollars in exchange for the U.S. essentially giving him lots of money and building all kinds of stuff in his country. And so that led us to the dominance of the Anglosphere Empire through the petrodollar issue. And curiously, we find that in the previous dealings with what we call Iran or Persia, they in fact had a democratic republic that was giving us issues in the late 40s, early 50s, because they didn't want to sell their oil to us in dollars. They just wanted to have an open market and sell their oil to whoever in whatever they could get for it. And we, by that I mean the British government and their stooges, the American government, didn't like it very much. So in 1953, the British government paid the CIA the staggering sum at the time of $1 million plus expenses to go on in and overthrow the democratically elected government of Iran, which they did. They did a real good job. And they replaced it with the Shah, and we have that history from that point on. So to a certain extent, there it's not that the Arab countries or oil-producing countries don't want to accept the dollar. It's that our karmic history is coming back to get us. You know, instant karma is going to get us here because we've been the bad guys. We've been altering the markets. I don't mean we personally, but our political elites and the rulers have been out there screwing the markets over wherever they could. They've been destabilizing governments, you know, seizing property, taking resources right and left, and basically to hell with the common person.
Exactly.
And so now we cannot be surprised when, in the point of our weakness of our currency, all of our supposed or all of our former clients, euphemism there from the IMF and the World Bank, are we're actually just kind of a little bit happy about the whole situation and can't wait for a further sign of weakness, because they don't like the take our dollars or we'll bomb you into the Stone Age kind of a business approach.
Yeah. Now, see, one thing that comes to my mind also is the potential is a control mechanism using the dollar. You know, if they crash our dollar, which is our only, as individuals, is our only source of trading and purchasing right now, that's going to give them quite a bit of control over the populace, don't you think? If they control our assets and our food distribution and whatnot, do you think that's going to be a factor?
That certainly is a tool that can be used, but it's not 100%. We need to really clarify our thinking about that. Mm-hmm. Right now, there's trillions, or not trillions, but certainly billions of dollars of trade that goes on in the U.S. that don't involve dollar units at all.
Okay.
And so there's already a gray and black market barter system that probably is easily 12 to somewhere over 12% of our gross national product. And it's all done at the barter level. And usually these are what we would consider to be the illegal economies. But nonetheless, that's been getting a broader and broader base for our regular economy. So you're quite correct. There might be some level of control there. But of course, it's an interesting sort of a tool. It's kind of like a nuclear weapon in the sense that it's a great threat, but the minute you use it, from that point on, it's absolutely useless. In this case, if they, meaning the political elite, decided they wanted to control the U.S. populace and they were going to do it through a crash of the dollar, bear in mind that from that point on, everything is uncertain. And we go back to, what's the guy's name, Art of War, Sun Tzu. Well, when you know, no battle plan survives the first contact with the enemy. In this case, the minute the dollar crashes, the creativity of the populace is released, and it will be very hard to put that creativity back into a control bottle of, say, an Amaro or some other currency or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And I kid you not, if they introduced the Amaro by dictator fiat, they are going to run into a situation where maybe they'll come out and say that, you know, 5 Amaros equal an ounce of silver. And I would be willing to place bets now using the common currency of humans, which is, you know, peach pie or something, that the Amaro would rapidly go to something on the order of maybe 500 or 600 Amaros to an ounce of silver just on the confidence level alone.
See, my one thing I've been thinking about a lot is the potential for digital currency. Like, if they were to put everything on digital format, would give them complete control, which might tie in with the idea of chipping people. You know, they could essentially turn off your value at will if you didn't comply with what they wanted, or if you were considered a terrorist or a patriot or a rebel or whatnot.
Sure, and that's certainly a tool they can use, but also bear in mind that, you know, there's a, from our viewpoint, sitting out here on the other side of the powers that be, there's a couple of things you need to bear in mind. The first time they do that to you, they automatically force you down into that 12% or whatever portion of the economy that's black market.
Yeah.
The more they do this to people, the larger that market becomes. They're not stupid. They are stupid, but they're clever. They will be aware of this. So they would be hesitant to use that on a mass scale. And it might be useful on some individuals, but also bear in mind that humans are adaptive. And just mm-hmm. because they shut you off of all your currency, all right, so you're going to have a freak out moment, run around for a week, you know, pulling out what hair is left on your head, and then you're...
It seems like what happened, everybody, is that for some reason we lost the link to Cliff, and we're trying to reestablish that right now.
Failed again, unknown error.
Yeah, it's... okay, everyone, we're going to take just maybe a 10-minute break here, and we're going to try and get a hold of Cliff on the landline. And see what's going on. We'll be right back on, okay? Bear with us. In 15 minutes, Cliff is going to go ahead and reestablish connection with us, and we'll resume. He said that he had multiple hostile IP attacks on his system and has been crashed. So he's currently rebooting, and he's got a few things he wants to wrap up as far as, I guess, security and some personal stuff. And then here at 30 minutes after the hour, we'll be getting back on.
Hang in there, guys. I don't, Dave, you want to keep the broadcast going? I'll play some music for the audience until we get back, or?
Yeah, we can do something like that. I'm kind of worried about this whole thing with Cliff. I know the system here, all the communications went out at the same time. So the broadcast totally froze up, all the Skype went down, everything just boom, gone.
Well, you know what, if the attack happens again, guys, keep in mind that we're getting attacked and we're getting hacked here, so bear with us. You know, we'll roll with the punches, man.
Or possibly what we could do is if you think we ought to have a few people call in and we can just kind of have a discussion here for a little bit, or what do you want to do?
Well, I think we can wait.
Okay.
You want to wait, or?
Oh, it doesn't matter to me. What we'll do, guys, once we get Cliff back on, we're going to kind of let him give his version of what just happened. And we are going to get to some questions here in a little bit. If Cliff's willing to do it, we're going to see if we can go a little bit longer possibly tonight, since we got started late and with all these delays. I'm going to go ahead and keep a live broadcast stream going here, just so you guys know that we're alive and well out here. And
I'll play some music, and then
okay,
let's
do that.
Perfect.
All right. Again, we apologize, guys. We're trying our best here, but we're having some outside intervention. Okay, U.S. Patriot, as far as the call-ins, I think we're going to wait on that just for a minute and try and get everything back up and running the way it should be first. We don't have any other issues we run into, okay? And here in a little bit, we'll get to the chat questions, and then maybe we'll put in some calls. Yes, Starfire, we do have a lot of the questions back here. Cliff is okay with it. He's just a little frustrated, understandably. I mean, he's kind of indicated that he's no stranger to these kind of attacks. It's happened before, and it'll probably happen again. You know, everybody that's out there listening, you know that there's a lot of people out there that don't want this information getting out, that don't want us communicating, that don't want these types of broadcasts, and they're going to do whatever they can to try and stop it.
Absolutely.
So keep that in mind. You know, what we're doing here and the information that we're trying to exchange with each other is not popular with the powers that be. So we might run into some problems once in a while, but we're trying our best. And as long as we all stick together and keep doing the best we can, I think we'll be okay. Chris, you going to run some music through there?
Sure, absolutely. Let's
all right.
Alright, let's go.
So we're going to do what we can while we can, okay? And Cliff, you want to go ahead and explain a little bit about what happened?
Yes, just as we were being dropped through Skype, a bunch of my little alarms went off. I have some honeypots as well as some port monitors, and all of a sudden there were people trying to crack into my system. It happens repeatedly. It's become rather annoying now because they apparently are targeting times when they know I'll actually be online. But I've rebooted and established a dynamic IP, so that'll throw them off for a while.
Well, you're a pretty popular guy.
They'll have to root around to find us, so yeah.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit after we had lost you about how, you know, this information's valuable, and there's a lot of people out there that really just don't want us exchanging it. So that's
that I think is true. I mean, as paranoid as that sounds, and actually anymore, we've got to all adopt the motto, if you're not paranoid, you're simply not paying attention.
Yeah, well, and it's not paranoia if they're really out to get you.
No, it's still paranoia, it's just valid.
Exactly.
Because paranoia doesn't say that it's not true, it just says you have a fear of people trying to get you.
All right, so so anyway, it looks like we had a little bit of fun here with the powers that be, or whoever it is out there. If they're monitoring, then from my view and in my opinion, I can just say you guys can all go F yourselves. The information will get out, so.
And that apparently is the case, and it's, you know, it's happening to a lot of people. I was listening to another show the other day, and they had some interruptions, you know, and it just happens on certain sensitive subjects. But let's jump into some of the prep stuff and then work our way up towards the space goat farts and the alien wars and all of that.
All right, alien wars is something people have been asking about as well. I'll just let you take it here for a bit.
I would say that's got me really excited, you know. I'm not really thrilled about the whole dollar death business. I've lived through a couple of currency problems globally, and it's not a whole lot of fun. It's rather predictable. This time it's going to be real interesting for people in the U.S. because we're going to get a huge shock to our economic base in the sense that we're consuming, you know, a disproportionate share of the planetary resources that has been propped up by the dollar. Once the dollar goes away, we'll have to pay real, true value for things.
Yes.
There's no wonder, for instance, that in Europe they were paying $8 a gallon gas while we were paying, you know, $1.29. And it has to do with the fact that the dollar was the currency by which the petrol had to be obtained. They had to buy dollars, therefore we controlled it. Once that goes away, we'll be in a reverse situation, only there will be a natural extreme that we'll have to go to before we bounce back to something a little bit more balanced.
Mm-hmm.
So it would not surprise me to see things like occurred in Argentina, and to see that, you know, you may have to be buying your gasoline in the future from a guy who calls you and then surreptitiously opens up his gasoline store and then sells it to you at $30 or $40 a gallon.
Yeah.
You know, out of the back of his garage, kind of a deal, right?
Well, we'll do what we have to do. You know, they can control the economy all they want, but if we develop trade amongst ourselves and our own structure of economy, they won't have any control over that.
And it will indeed develop just that way. And it's happened 4 times before on this continent that we've had a currency crash. If you go and read history about what happened immediately before, during, and after, it's going to be a fairly predictable pattern. This time, though, it'll be a little bit different because we don't have the farming resources the way we used to, both
yeah.
for us, all of us, to live on, and as we did in the previous depression. We were far more rural than we were urban as a nation. And also, we're going to have the issue of the collapse of the food supplies this time, so it's going to get really grim that way. So now, regular people ought to just consider a certain level of priority, and they should say to themselves that, you know, we're not rich, we don't have gazillions of dollars lying around, but we have some little tiny bit of resources. We need to think about how to allocate them. And the first thing I would say is get food that you will eat in the case of a breakdown of the social structure. And that means that, you know, you go to the grocery store one day and it simply isn't open because of the riots the night before, or you heard on the news that, you know, there's a trucker strike, or no one's shipping oil, and therefore the diesel isn't flowing, and therefore the truckers aren't moving, and your stores run out of food in 3 or 4 days. Well, it makes sense to buy food that you will eat. So make sure that if you're buying freeze-dried stuff, buy a little tiny bit of it and sample it just to make sure that it's going to be compatible with you. On the whole, I think there's a lot of stuff in our regular diets that we can buy in store, long-term storage, you know, pasta, that kind of thing. And that needs to be your first priority. Because it will be I think, at least 3 to 4 months, according to the way that data has shaped up and the crocodile teeth going into a context shift on December 29. And so I say that we had a currency crisis that developed from October 25th through to November 4th, and we're all in tension mode, and we're kind of wondering what's going to happen, and then some kind of release up and down for the rest of November. I would suspect that if we have that current level of a currency crisis, it'll be January or February before we haven't even started the process of coming up with patches for the systems that are failing. So that means that there might be 3 or 4 months when food supplies are at best erratic, and everybody should pray diligently that we're able to keep things going without the federal government having to come on in and decide that they need to seize the distribution system to ensure that it all works, because then we'd be truly screwed.
Oh, absolutely, yeah,
no,
definitely.
No question.
See, I think that's a big part of it is preparation. You know, everyone knows this stuff's coming. We got to prepare. And another thing in regard to that is the fear that's out there. I know that there's a lot of people out there that are fearful, that are having anxiety, that are really worried about this. But the one thing that everyone needs to keep in mind is this. If we did not have a collapse, if we did not have a revolution of some sort, if these terrible, terrible things did not occur at some point, nothing would ever change. So this is a necessary evil. And just keep that in mind. You know, it might be fearful for now, but it's necessary. If we're ever going to change and evolve, we need this to happen.
Yeah, and I would actually take the word evil off of it. Let's just look at it as a challenge, right?
Yes.
And here's the way of it is from the martial arts perspective. The ordinary person sees everything that comes into their life as either a curse or a blessing. And so they're constantly jerked back and forth in an emotional state between euphoria and depression by their very daily activities that they encounter. And so if you just twist your mind a little bit and say everything, including blessings, but as well as curses, are really a challenge, and that my goal is to challenge myself to deal with these with equanimity and an even emotional state, regardless of what the circumstances are, then we can all get along a whole lot better without having to put the energy into that back and forth on the, you know, oh, it's good for me, it's bad for me kind of a deal. It also eliminates the issue of fear. Yes, you will have a physical body reaction when something is startling, but your mind will be pre-programmed to respond appropriately because you will have eliminated this whole idea that this is a curse upon you suddenly, so to speak.
Yeah.
But at this point, one other thing, or two other things really, that need to be considered in our dollar collapse, and especially relative to how the food's been going and the climate change issues here, is that the... it won't be ubiquitous, so not everybody is going to have the same level of discomfort relative to how the dollar crashes. Mm-hmm. I was speaking with someone the other day, and we were making some comparisons and some analyses, and for instance, there are some certain conclusions we can come to, that, you know, California is going to do reasonably okay insofar as vegetables, you know, breadbasket kind of thing. So depending on what is grown in your area, you may find that you are less impacted than in other spots of the country.
Oh, yeah.
So, for instance, it's actually good to be in New Jersey, where they have a great deal of diversity in the farms, and bad to be in Kansas and the other square states in the middle, where they're more monoculture,
and
because
they're
going to have to bust up.
I'm in the middle of Kansas. I'm just about dead center of the geographical United States.
Well, there you go then, and you know, driving mile after mile after mile of corn, there's not a whole lot of tomatoes and potatoes and other things growing in that corn.
Yep. Yeah, well, even the farmers out here are having a really rough time right now.
Oh, I know. No one in the food industry is making money at the farmer level. That's absolutely totally understood here. We've actually, Washington is a great dairy state, or used to be, and we've got dairies that are folding, and some of these dairies have, you know, a 30 and 40 and 50 year history here, and they are just not able to make money at all.
Yeah.
And of course, a lot of it has to do with the dollar itself. And the currency is a terrible thing to have it monkeyed with, because it robs people in favor of the rich. Bear in mind, inflation actually benefits the rich greatly. But it robs everybody of that for which they work, which is their joy in life, their
yes.
potential for retirement, the idea that, you know, they're going to be able to spend a little bit of money on, say, a you know, an extra nice Beaujolais with dinner, or, you know, take their partner out for a nice dinner, something along these lines, and get that joy back into their lives. That was really the part that struck me in reading all the history of the previous depression in this country, as well as some of the impacts of the Sterling Depression in Britain, was the tone that took over, because inflation ate you alive. You could no longer think about the allocation of resources towards those things that were fitting to the soul. You had to constantly work on merely maintaining the body. And
yeah.
unfortunately, we're going to go into a period of time that may last 18 or 20 months here in this country, where that's going to be our main primary focus as the rest of this crud starts swirling around us. So we're about to hit the, I think, 10:25 in my way of thinking, marks the real start of the slide, so to speak, that from that point on, events are likely to seem as though they're running slightly ahead of our ability to control them or even catch up to them. There will be a certain amount of anxiety just about daily event volume from what we see in our data.
Yeah. Well, I know the anxiety levels are pretty high out there. You know, I can see it in all places on the net, just talking to people. People that you never would have expected were awake and aware about these things are now starting to prepare. So it's definitely something is happening. I just hope everybody out there remembers that when this stuff does occur, we need to work together, because it's us versus them, you know? And their system's
going
down.
Well, also, there's billions of us, so
that's
we will
right.
win. It's just a matter of what we've got to go through to see that day.
That's right. Like somebody here in chat said, fighting, looting, killing, really bad stuff. That's exactly the point. We need to maintain our composure. We need to work together in groups, and we need to help each other through this. Because when it's all said and done, we are going to be the ones that inherit what's left.
Correct. But at the same time, let's also look at this immense challenge ahead of us as a marvelous opportunity to reinvent ourselves and our place in the world. I, for instance, will applaud the collapse of the Anglo-American Empire.
Agreed.
And the defeat of the monarchist, and I will say to myself, what can I do to make the America that I live in, the United States of America, a benefit to the populace of this planet instead of tacit support of one of the greater evils on the planet? And I would agree with the use of evil in that term.
Yeah. So now, Cliff, I got a question for you real quick. We're already running at about 15 till the hour. Are you going to be able to stay on a little longer, or are you going to need
sure,
to
sure,
stop?
Sure, sure, sure. I'm not constrained. We'll just keep going, guys.
Okay, great, because I really don't want to rob everybody of the opportunity. I know there were a lot of people that were anxious about hearing what you have to say, and
sure.
So we'd
like to... No problem at all. We'll just keep going until the voice gives out or the Skype guys come and hack us again.
Oh, those bastards. So, well, let's change gears a little bit here now. I'm seeing just a lot of different subjects coming through the chat that people are asking about.
We covered the financial collapse. We covered a little bit of the preparations. I think at this point in time, if you don't know that you need to prepare for what's coming, then...
Yeah, it's too late.
What can we tell you? I mean, we've been preaching the same song and dance now for...
Exactly.
How many years?
Yes, but now we got to get real serious about, also, we've all prepared, but now we need to start doing what we can to prepare and put stuff away for those of our idiot relatives that'll come and say, hey, what's going on later, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let's cover a little bit about the 15% DNA, what exactly that means. Are people changing on a conscious level overall? Is this a genetic thing? What is the UFO ET involvement? And how does that relate with the government and the powers that be?
Okay, one last thing I need to say about the currency collapse before we get too far off.
Okay.
Because I've actually had a number of questions about it. If I'm correct and there is this tension period and then we get into the currency collapse itself, be advised that it probably does not aid you to try and make a mortgage payment under those circumstances or to pay your other bills. There may be issues with mail delivery and so on. And I'm not saying don't ever, or don't plan on never paying bills after that point, but I am saying that if you're of strapped resources and you see the economic system breaking down all around you and you're seeing it on the daily news, probably the thing to do would be to maybe see if you couldn't put some of that money towards food. And
yes,
with the expectation you'll have to make your mortgage payment later when stuff sort of straightens out, maybe. And that's the issue, is maybe. In Argentina, the collapse rate was such that there was a bond crisis. 2 months later, the currency collapsed. There was social infrastructure collapse. They lost their first president. They had like six or seven presidents over the course of 6 or 8 weeks. But as soon as they had the bond crisis moved into the currency collapse, from that point on, people essentially stopped making mortgage payments to extra local authority. In other words, if you had a landlord, you'd still try and pay them, but in the history of Argentina's collapse, they stopped shipping off money to IMF and this kind of stuff during that period of time. Mm-hmm. I suspect we'll also get to that point. Now, and it's nothing I can say, well, today don't make your mortgage payment, but I'm saying you probably are going to be able to figure it out just by what's going on relative to what the mainstream media shows you and what you see happening around you.
Yeah, I think the focus is going to be on day-to-day survival for that period of time.
I agree, but there will be a whole lot of people that will feel compelled to try and live life as normal, in the sense that, you know, a budget, allocating their mortgage, making the payment, trying to get it into the mail, and so on. And during this period of time, and in this chaos, yes, it could be used as an excuse or a trigger to cause foreclosures, but we're talking about something that's happening en masse to us all, and under those circumstances, conditions truly change, and the rules truly change. For instance, in the time of the bank holidays and so forth in the 30s, there were explicit rules about what the post office would and wouldn't carry in terms of what they could ship and what they couldn't.
Yeah.
And it simply related to trying to get some level of business as usual going in their decaying system. And that's what we're in now, is a system that is dying of its own. So we can leave that subject there and just go from that point on. And let's jump back to the 15%er, guys.
Alrighty.
I have one little question quick before we go into the 15%er, just because I've been seeing a lot of this on the media lately, and the rolling out of the H1N1 vaccination, and you know, they're leaning towards the first week of November, and I'm up here in Canada, and we're looking at first week in November. I think they're trying to push the rollout also as soon as possible in the States. Do you have any comments on that, or is this? I'm not worried
about
it.
Well, that's their next tactic in the population reduction.
Right.
It's really blatant in Canada because the Crown has decided that the First Nations people will be the brunt of another extinction attempt, and they've already started poisoning the people with Tamiflu. And the Tamiflu is good. That's the issue. It's actually poisoning them and doing its job. It is not a good substance. And we've had all kinds of reports from my friends in the Salish that the First Nations that have already accepted the Tamiflu, they've got hundreds of individuals sick, and other villages that are to be Tamiflu'd are already receiving body bags. What's that all about? So this tells me that indeed the whole let's destroy as much of humanity as we can with and remain with ourselves on top population reduction meme is a reality. And I shouldn't be surprised because the powers that be have always used disease to get rid of population they don't like. Smallpox in South America on blankets from the Jesuits. The Jesuits used smallpox and other disease here in the U.S. again on blankets to the indigenous population. So it's like we all got to start thinking of ourselves now as indigenous population or Indians or First People, however you want to phrase it, and them white guys, hey, I wouldn't take their blankets. You know, it's a little risky. So it strikes me as one of those things that if you don't do the research, you're likely to go get the shot. There will be severe consequences, I'm quite sure.
Have you seen that? There's a video floating around on YouTube about a lady that is now partly paralyzed and having seizures and stuff from taking one of those vaccines. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't seen that, but that would strike me as perfectly sound because that's the Guillain-Barré syndrome that arose the last time they tried this.
Yeah.
And what everyone needs to understand is that they're actually giving you proteins from swine, and swine proteins in many cases are very similar to native human proteins, and your body is going to look at these proteins as an infection point and start attacking its own system as a result of this introduction of the swine. And we really have to understand this, that this is not a good thing, and then with the other crud they're putting in there, the thimerosal and some of the other stuff, and I was shocked. I mean, I've read list of ingredients for some of the vaccines and the Tamiflu kind of stuff that have aspartame in there. Why does it need a sweetener? Is the bacteria got a sweet tooth?
Yeah, they like to be sneaky with the way they slip us stuff, you know?
It is quite terrible, yes.
Oh.
But you know, this is one of those things where anybody pops up and asks, I'm going to say you'd be a fool. In my opinion, you'd be a fool to take any of the vaccines. And actually, I can demonstrate statistically that vaccines are not as they have been sold. That is to say, they do not, in a general sense, aid the broader populace in the reduction of disease. The only thing they appear to have any evidence for is that sometimes vaccines actually could be said to have lessened the impact of a particular disease on you. So even the regular flu shot doesn't mean you won't get flu. Their theory is that your flu would be less ferocious, but there's no real evidence of that other than this one or two studies that they've got, and a lot of that is conjecture. And actually, if you plot vaccines as they're introduced into the society, for instance, the salt polio vaccine, the great, hail, hail, we're on top of disease forever thing in the 50s, that as a child, I was forced to suck on sugar cubes and get shots and all this kind of stuff, as they kept introducing all these vaccines. And yet, when we look at it statistically, the salt polio vaccine came about 7 months, was introduced to the populace about 7 months after polio had peaked and dropped to its low-level, quote, sustainability point or carry trade point within the disease vector itself. So in other words, it was like 8 months after all the horses had left and the barn was mostly burned down, you decided to shut the door and then claim that shutting the door saved everything. So the whole vaccine business is really a risky proposition, and I actually am very encouraged because recent polls are showing that over 60% of the people in the U.S. are actually questioning whether they will accept a swine flu vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know I'm not taking one.
That's going to throw the powers that be into a bit of a little tizzy, I think.
Oh, yeah, I think that's where the whole martial law card comes in, is that's their backup. If we won't do it willingly, then they're going to find a way to try to make us do it.
I don't believe that. And the reason I don't has to do with logistics.
Okay.
You have to understand that martial law means what? It doesn't mean troops on the street. By definition, martial law simply means that the civilian court structure is suspended and all legal or law enforcement matters would be handled by a military court structure. That's the actual definition of martial law. So it doesn't even really imply occupation forces.
So it's more in a legal context.
Correct, correct. And actually what it says is that, you know, if you got picked up for speeding under conditions of martial law, then you would be turned over to a military court system.
Okay.
And you wouldn't go through your local provincial or county court system for your DWI or whatever. And instead you'd go to a military court system. In effect, we always associate mentally in the context of martial law, we always think of it as occupation, because usually the two go hand in hand. They need not, but let's assume that they did it in this case. If you took every single person in the United States military, regardless of their job category, and I'm talking about people that are clerks, but actual people that have assigned the oath with the military and assigned the contract, not subcontractors, mm-hmm. just regular guys that are in the military, in the Navy, Air Force, even the Coast Guard, Marines, all of them total, and you did it all the way up to the generals, and you took them all out of the Pentagon, and you gave them all guns, that in the United States continental landmass, that is, we have enough soldiers, sailors, etc., to put one per 10 square miles. Mm-hmm. And that's the concentration level we could achieve, which means that if they were going to do some kind of an occupation or use a martial law excuse to try and force a vaccine, they would have to take another tact on it. That is to say, they couldn't simply do it by sheer force of numbers.
Well, they would
and
fail.
So go ahead.
I was going to say, I think they would fail miserably if they tried to just do it troop versus people. We have them severely outnumbered and pretty much outgunned, I would say, these days.
Correct. And so what they'll do is they will use a different pattern of social engineering to try and coerce or heighten the voluntary acceptance of the vaccine. And this might get to the point where a local representative would call you and claim to be, and probably would be, working at your local county health department and say, okay, Mr. Bill, I want you to come down and get your shot. What day? When can we schedule you and your wife and your two daughters? And Mr. Bill would say, well, you know, what are you talking about? And they would say, well, we're calling from your local county health department, and you have to come down and get your shot. Our records show that no one in your family has gotten a shot. You better come down and get your vaccine right away. Or, and they'll basically use a lot of language to imply that there's some nasty else on the other side of it.
Like fines or whatnot.
If we tried that again here for instance, in the county I'm in, and they were not using military, but they were going to rely on local law enforcement, we've only got four sheriff's deputies in the county. We're under huge budget constraints. All of our local police are barely hanging on by a thread budgetarily, and the stress on the whole system is such that they're probably, I would say that all law enforcement total probably in Thurston County probably doesn't come to more than 600 individuals, and I'm even talking jail guards.
Wow.
So it'd be awful hard to use a local system to impress that kind of a system on 150,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
So for a lot of reasons, I doubt that there will be a, quote, forced vaccination, or even a roundup for that matter. And I've got buddies of mine, let's look at the FEMA camps issues, right?
Yes.
Okay, I've got friends of mine that say, well, they're you know, building these FEMA camps all over and stuff. And I say, okay, and do you have any evidence of that? And they send me these contracts, which I've seen, the Halliburton and the KBR and some of the other contracts
mm-hmm.
that the government has let in the United States for the building of these detention camps. And indeed, some have been built, because I'm able to go and look at resources that show the purchase of cement, the allocation of phone subcontractors, people that come on in and do wiring, all of this kind of stuff for a couple of the camps along in the southern tier of states that are related to the immigration issue. And even these are relatively small, and they're not really FEMA camps. They were built by Halliburton for the INS. And we're talking about camps that at most would hold 3,000 individuals and had housing and structure and so on. But the point being that it was easy to go into the federal government registers and online material and track all their expenditures on all the cement required and so on. And I have not been able to confirm the creation of these 800 FEMA camps or whatever are supposed to be out there in the various states by virtue of the resources being used. Mm-hmm. So there may indeed have been contracts, and they may have built them and done some sneaky kind of accounting so that it doesn't show up in the local cement prices in Chicago or Las Vegas, that they're building a large camp there that's going to consume cement for, 30 or 40 or 50 days.
Yeah.
I just don't see any cement price spikes in any of these areas that supposedly have these camps built. So on the main, I would say there's a lot of rumor, but I sure haven't seen a lot of evidence for FEMA having camps that could incarcerate anything close to a significant portion of the populace. Mm-hmm. And then there's one other way to look at it, and that is that we don't need a camp. We're already living in one.
Basically. Very true, very true.
So, I mean, we can probably leave that subject there if you want. There's a lot to be paranoid about. They're trying to kill us all off, but some of the grosser ideas of, white trains full of shackles with guillotines and giant installations at the end of the trains, I don't see any evidence for.
Well, it could just be part of a psyop, kind of a fear tactic thing. If we know the camps are there, then that gives us something else to worry about.
Correct, and I would agree with that. There are psyops going on all the time.
There's one thing that's a little ambiguous, and that's the, it's happening every day, chemtrails. What is it? Is it, is this part of the inevitable plan, the transformation that we're talking about? Or are we?
Yeah, it's a very scary thing. To not be worried about it really is freaky.
I mean,
I know people that say, oh yeah, I see them, but I'm not worried about them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, what's in it, right? What's going on? It's obviously not good for us if it's so secretive.
And there, there's another issue. I actually suffered from it. Yesterday I lost 24 hours, actually 25 hours, to a sinus headache that is directly chemtrail related. Even though we've got heavy rains going on at the moment, they're spraying like mad on the other side of those. You can hear the planes go over, and of course the rains wash it down.
Right.
And also these sinus attacks that I've had that yield these headaches have existed only since the chemtrail phenomenon in this area in earnest is since 1998. I saw my first set of undeniable chemtrails in 97, and from that point on, I've been really wondering, and initially I wanted to buy the idea that it was all about the change of the albedo, that it was an attempt to throw off the extra energy that's coming in.
Right.
And it may be, that may be one of the reasons that they originally started it, because that's where most of the patents go that are related to chemical aerosols, but the composition of these things is so weird that it now has to be assume that it is yet another one of their, by that I mean the powers that be's, tools against us. And as a rule now, if I know they're spraying, I'm not outside doing anything.
Yeah, that's good advice. I try to stay indoors also and keep the kids in.
So,
but even so, that's kind of a to a certain extent, it's a false hope, because unless you've got really good full air system for the house filtering, likely we're still all going to be breathing it.
Yeah, you're breathing the air regardless. It gets in one way or the other.
Do you have any
aluminum? I'm sorry, aluminum, by the way, one of the main components that can be validated everywhere, is a known or has a known causal link to Alzheimer's and so on, but has also been used by the military as a dust in previous episodes to cause mental confusion among displaced persons and prisoners and so on.
Oh, yeah. In regards to the aluminum, I've also heard something along the lines of the micro-aluminum particles in the chemtrails could also have some kind of component that allows them to interact with HARP. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that would make sense, but I don't know that HARP is an ionosphere heater, and it's part of their whole scalar weapons thing, and I've also heard some very extensive researchers who say that, the barium and all of this is being sprayed to enable the military to use around the horizon radar and get 3D battle images for the Navy, and that it's all a Navy program. Mm-hmm. And I've actually found some support for that, in the sense that the initial chemtrail patents and everything all do trace back to the Navy. So they were at least at the beginning of this, but it probably has grown way beyond their initial concepts about and what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. So HARP.
Nonetheless, it's not good that we're breathing in this crud, and it's also not good that they're beaming all this stuff up to heat up the atmosphere in a particular time of our planet when our ionosphere is already weak and under a lot of pressure because the magnetosphere is degrading.
Yes. Let me throw a couple keywords out there for you, Cliff. I'm trying to watch the chat here. I want to be sure to get to some people's questions.
Sure.
Let me throw out some keywords at you, and then I'll just let you take it and cover them how you feel is important.
Okay.
Definitely the 15% thing is something. The global shift, as far as consciousness, and let me scroll up here a little bit. Somebody asked about, is high resonance the key to transcending these troubles? And
no, actually, I don't think we transcend anything, and it's foolish to even think that way. You know, the whole idea of peace, light, and love forever doesn't really fit universe. Universe's right. Rule seems to be more of a, if I have to use an analogy, I would say it's a dojo, and we're here to learn our combative arts, to get over our fears, and to progress to some level of personal centeredness. And the universe throws at us what we require, not what we think we want.
Yeah, well, it would appear that, like, you know, even the concept of peace, love, and light, it's a great thing, and the unity is a great thing, it's a great concept, but it's still a part of duality.
Correct. You never know one without the other. So,
exactly.
So basically, in terms of high resonance, is an interesting thought, and perhaps even of some value, but it almost is as though, on the other part of it, is to overcome or escape these troubles, and I don't think we should. I think we should, you know, embrace it and jump in. But then again, you know, I've got Mars dominating my natal sun or some damn thing, and so I'm a martial artist, and I can't help myself. There will be a lot of people that simply won't react that way.
What do you think about this moon bombing? I'm seeing that over and over and over in here. What's your input
on that? That's really strange. I'm sure, of course, that, you know, we're not being told anything close to what was the whole point of it. The idea of all the water and stuff, yeah, that might be a plausible explanation, but it seems kind of spurious. I actually think they're trying to hide something, in the sense that I have no real evidence to suggest this, but at a gut level, my impression is that they were going to blow up something they didn't want others to see.
Like maybe ruins or something of that nature?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Like maybe ruins or maybe even a possible covert base that our government has there or another government?
I would suspect that's the case, yeah. Yeah, ruins or a base that we've got there. There appears to be, in spite of the woo-woo nature of saying it even, there appears to be more and more evidence leaking out of a secret U.S. space program, or let's not even call it space, let's call it hyperdimensional technology, because it's beyond space and time. And there's a lot of evidence to support the idea that the anti-gravitics is about 50 or 60 years ahead of where we are in the civilian level. So, I mean, I actually, you know, a float around triangles is something I've observed.
Yeah, I've actually seen UFOs myself, very close and personal. That's what made me a believer.
Yeah, exactly. And it was one of those things where it's like, okay, it's sitting up over my head. And I can see that those trees are, you know, and I know trees live here in the Northwest. The trees, they're 130 to 180 feet high. And that thing is it's casting light down, blah, blah, blah. It's the middle of the night. And, oh, by the way, it looks to be about a mile across. And there's no sound coming from it, and then it goes zip and it's gone. So I kind of suspect that we've got a dual society going on here. That part of our society, led by the shadow government, is sucking resources from the rest of us, bleeding us all as slaves, while they are building their way towards a type 1 civilization, which is to say interplanetary and sustainable energy, free energy, that kind of thing. And the rest of us are just being excluded because of the feudal nature of the social order that we've never yet thrown off. And I say that we've never yet thrown it off, and it'll probably offend all you Canadians, but I think that the Queen and everybody who claims aristocracy should be made to stand in front of a video and recant that and go about living as an ordinary human and be re-educated and allowed to do something useful for society or killed. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a person that really thinks that killing is a solution. But from our viewpoint now, it's horrific to say, but I understand why they killed the Tsar's family in the Bolshevik Revolution.
Yeah.
And it had little to do with a fear of an immediacy from them, but a fear of a resurgence of the monarchy later on, which gets us all back into being trapped in the idea that these people have somehow got the divine right to rule, such that badly dressed woman and her foul-mouthed husband in England claim to own 1/6 of the planet and all the people that live on it.
Hey, Cliff.
Yeah.
I'm seeing over and over here, Israeli mistake.
Sure, the Israeli mistake. Right now, you see the shift in language. If you look into the media globally, and you're looking at the mainstream press and even some of the alternatives, you're seeing that we're crawling towards some kind of a conclusion. The curious part that I'm seeing now, though, is that some of the mainstream publications are now saying, you know, that I've actually seen headlines, Israel will attack Iran before March. So some of those things were saying that kind of language in a vague sense. They weren't giving dates, but they were saying, the Israeli attack is basically on, that the Iranians need to be taught a lesson, blah, blah, blah. And this in late last year, they were saying that we would see it in 2009. Now some of those same publications are holding out this March view. So I don't know if we're dealing with a psyop to, you know, at any of the various different levels that could be implied, or if in fact there's something that is starting to push the pressure back. But here's the one thing that I do know at the moment.
Okay.
That they won't release the Israelis or allow the Israelis to attack Iran as long as there is some need or hope on the part of the political minions and the powers that be for the existing economic system. In other words, they know that an Israeli attack on Iran finishes everything.
Yeah.
AIG is shot, banks fold, $300 oil overnight, and you can just imagine all the consequences, and it just goes on and on and on. So until we actually have an economic collapse that gets to the point where the powers that be just don't care, the Israelis are on hold. This would imply, then we should imply or infer that if indeed the dollar collapse would be slow enough, it might actually have a tendency to push the Israelis out to a point where they might not be in a position to attack when they finally decided that they wanted to do so.
Mm-hmm. Hey,
now, I say one of our issues is that we get language forecasts. We don't actually get a picture of the event. We don't get movies of the event. We get a bunch of words in a giant mass that appear to be a forecast of the words that will be used after the events. Mm-hmm. So our words relative to the Israeli mistake might show up 6 or 8 months from now if we had a whole series of articles coming out during the revolutionary phase about how close we did come to joining with the Israelis in an attack on Iran. So the jury is still out. We will see the language, but as to what the event will be that will cause it, at this point, I don't have any clearer vision of that. We might get something when we start the next run going here for the December report, but I bet you that we should all be able to see it regardless of my report before the end of the year anyway.
Sorry about that. I just had a phone call. Hey, Cliff.
That's right.
I'm going to throw out a few keywords here that are coming in through the questions.
Sure.
And see what you can make of that. One of them is December context change, ill wind, Obama UFO disclosure.
Yeah, I don't know about the Obama disclosure. I've always assumed, and this is an assumption on my part, so it'll probably come back and bite me in the ass, but I've always assumed that disclosure would have such a huge emotional impact that it would be a giant tipping point, and thus would show up in our data as just that, a giant tipping point.
Yeah.
Now, it's true we've got some of those for 2011, but it's also true that we see the alien wars showing up before then, so I don't know that I don't have anything in my data that would suggest that Obama's going to do disclosure in the rest of 2009 or even up until March or April of 2010.
Okay.
It may show up then, but and it could actually be hidden then, in the sense that Obama, according to the way we see our data shaping up, he could come out next March and get on TV and say, yes, here's all these space aliens, and contact is real. And it won't matter much because we'll be in the midst of active revolution and there won't be a whole lot of people paying attention.
Okay.
Plus, there's one other thing going against that.
What's
that? And that is that Obama hasn't got the security clearance to find out about these guys.
Well, this is true. We know there's how many levels above the president?
At least 27.
Wow.
And there may be more.
Ill winds. Unruly Julie is really wanting to know about ill winds.
Those were the last, when we did this last run, they were still building. There will be at least an 18-week period of time that in which the ill winds will be a source of concern for a largish percent of the populace. It does seem to be tied to the Israeli mistake. We can see some interpretation that would suggest that the ill winds will be active in spite of the Israeli mistake at least one of the episodes of The Ill Winds will be in the January, February, and probably from, say, the 22nd of January all through February and maybe into the early part of March of next year. I suspect that that one is related to the onset of the more lethal form of the swine flu. But I don't know for sure. It's like I say, it's all tied up with the Israeli mistake. But the Israeli mistake does not eliminate the ill winds. It just seems to contribute to them. So in other words, we have ill winds relative to the swine flu. We have ill winds relative to the powers that be in their attempt for population control. Mm-hmm. And then we have ill winds related to the Israeli mistake. The Israeli mistake does not eliminate the other two sources of that same set of archetypes.
Okay. And also, a couple other topics I'd like to touch on. Unruly Julie says thank you, by the way.
Sure. I love that name. That's great. Yeah,
yeah, that's
Unruly
awesome.
Julie, yes.
Nibiru is one subject. The December context change is another subject. And
yeah, okay. Let's just deal with those two right at the
okay.
moment. The Nibiru thing... There is some support for near-Earth objects giving us some problem, but I don't have anything in my data to suggest that that is anything more that the Nibiru or Giant Planet X or Nemesis is anything more than a tool being used by the powers that be to generate fear and to also segregate populace. Would they, in other words, they can actually say, and they have and are doing. They're creating memes and saying, how many people can we get to buy into this? What will it take to flesh this out to the point where we can get it to be a self-sustaining community that would then go off and burn energy doing this other stuff? The military does that kind of thing now, and they're paying people to generate these kinds of situations online. So, but our data shows the Nibiru or Planet X or... let me just shade it all the way over to near-Earth orbiting objects mm-hmm. or passing objects. And we do have some small amount, a little tiny bit of support for it being a reality in the future in the sense of a flyby that causes some problems. But we don't have anything to support the idea of a giant planet filled with, you know, huge Anunnakis or whatever the hell live there coming to cause us problems. It just doesn't show up. It only goes so far and it stops. And it's kind of... it's one of those things where we can actually see some memering going on some of these other threads. Now, this idea of Nibiru is not like that in the sense that we can't trace it back to a government op somewhere or a government set of IP addresses as the way we can with some of the memering. But it does
seem to go back to basically a single source,
which is the Sitchin writings.
And because of that,
there's no other historical support within our data to give us a broader archetype.
The archetype goes down a couple layers in a
widening pyramid and then starts narrowing and so thus becomes this sort of diamond-shaped. And so those are the kind of things where we know we're dealing with disinformation, where it doesn't have that broader base pyramid support mm-hmm. of archetypes underneath it.
Okay.
Now, on the other side, the context change on the 29th, we should be able to give you a better idea of what words will be associated with that in the early December run.
Okay.
Right at the moment, we kind of think that, well, let me put it this way. The context change is an aggregation of a lot of different emotional sums that seem to focus in on one broad archetype under which, acting as an umbrella, a larger number of similar subjects are housed. So in other words, the last time we had a context change, the context change at the largest level, the highest level of the archetype, was immigration. One step down from that was undocumented worker or illegal immigration. And so our context changed because all of a sudden that was what was in the mainstream and it became a major thread. We had all different kinds of demonstrations of the emotional power of that, and it changed the context in a rather short period of time of, say, less than a month. Mm-hmm. And it started on a particular day. This time our context change is clearly involving the dollar. And so it might be that on December 29th, the federal government would go ahead and, say, declare bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. And in that case, they wouldn't send out Social Security checks or any other entitlement. And we might even have the Constitution officially suspended while the government tries to work out its issues of not being bankrupt anymore. That kind of a context change would be what we call a sole point source context shift, whereas the immigration came from all over the place, even though it was sort of controlled, and even though it was sort of leaked out and managed, nonetheless, it arose in multiple different places, more or less all at once. The context change for the 29th of December seems to support the idea that it will be from the top down, so to speak, or will go through society that way, as opposed to coming from the bottom up, the way we saw with the mass marches of the undocumented workers, etc.
Okay.
Okay. Also, so wouldn't surprise me to see, for the context change, to see any number of strange things occur, but they're all going to be related to human-to-human kind of activity. In other words, context changes are not usually, in fact, in our history, have never been associated in our work with anything like natural disasters or any of that. Those show up under a different kind of situation.
Okay. And also, I just wanted to let everybody out there in the chat know I'm trying to monitor the questions here so we can get to them. I like what you're doing where you just put it in bold every once in a while. That way I can kind of keep an eye on it. But also, just so you know, this is actually Light Essence 37 from YouTube. I'm not Trevor. This is not the normal host. He's kind of been missing for a while, so I'm just kind of doing an improv stand-in here. So I hope you all bear with me. I'm trying to do my best for you.
Very well done, Dave. We appreciate it.
And Magnetosphere, Cliff, is a... I need to get to that one. There's Pauly's Customs is really adamant about getting to that.
Yeah, the magnetosphere is very troubling. Here's the issue with that. It actually has degraded to the point where if we were to look at the Earth and you imagine the atmosphere as being bigger than the Earth and say that in your mind you thought of the atmosphere as having, say, 60% more volume than the Earth, so it's out there a ways, the magnetosphere hovers on the other side of the planet and is probably, let's just say, 400 times the volume of the atmosphere in terms of the area that it encompasses. Mm-hmm. So what I'm about to tell you will sort of make sense.
What's
our
that?
Magnetosphere, even though it surrounds our Earth, has several Earth-sized holes in it. Some of these Earth-sized holes are multiple Earth-sized holes, and it's causing real problems. There are areas of the planet down Patagonia, even now into the Caribbean with the South Atlantic anomaly, and there's one area over the, I think it's over Ghana now in Africa that's smallish. But nonetheless, the magnetosphere is quote, degrading, and it is allowing extra radiation to come in. This is not a good situation at all. It will certainly be associated with mutations. It'll certainly be associated with all kinds of rises in first-generation mutations like cancers and this kind of thing, as opposed to multiple-generation mutations that might even be viable, but certainly will produce birth defects. It may, it will certainly impact fertility in a general scale because of the kinds of radiations coming on in, and it is not a good thing because it's becoming, the magnetosphere holes are becoming more stable, and that's the really frightening part. It is apparent that we're going through a transitional phase, not only as humans on this planet and all of our mucking about with each other, but also the planet and the solar system itself.
Mm-hmm.
It may indeed be that this apparent magnetosphere crisis could, for instance, we could have our context change in December not relate to the dollar and not be the result of a natural disaster, but might relate to our sudden realization as to, for instance, how we now have to start living with ourselves because of a looming environmental collapse. So in other words, if the context change were to tweak a certain way, it might be a green crisis, so to speak, where something triggers the powers that be to let the word out as to just how fragile the whole Earth system is, and there's nothing we can do about it. I don't think they're ready to release that kind of information, and it really does appear to come out in the revolutionary period of time, but I'm just throwing it out because we don't yet have a handle on the 1229 context change.
Okay.
But anyway, the magnetosphere is troubling because there's another aspect of it that's a little bit interesting, to say the least. And that is that when the magnetosphere is weak, a CME could come through from the sun and cause vast quantities of damage. Further, it is theoretically feasible that a CME from the sun, a coronal mass ejection, that is preceded by what do they call those? Not flares. The
solar flare.
Prominences.
Yeah, correct. Not, but the prominence itself throws off a magnetic field. Mm-hmm. If that's followed by a magnetic bow wave that's being pushed along, so to speak, by the coronal mass ejection. And the magnetic bow wave would not dissipate the way that they normally would. Thus, the coronal mass ejection itself, those ultra-high-energy particles, are pushing along an intense magnetic bubble, if you will, or part of a bubble ahead of them. This is key because that magnetism itself can cause problems with our magnetosphere. In its weakened stage, if we were to receive a southern or south pole impacting south pole or negative energy magnetic bubble from the sun, mm-hmm. our magnetosphere would go spinning around like it was a top. I mean, I kid you not, it would become totally displaced and go whipping around.
And what do you think that would do to our weather and whatnot?
Certainly it would screw the weather up, there's no question about it. And during the period of time that the CME was coming in, with the magnetosphere spinning, so to speak, relative to the Earth, as if the Earth were stable, it would allow the radiation to come on in various different areas. In other words, the holes would in the magnetosphere right now might allow radiation to come in and hit the southern part of South America and part of the Caribbean. But if it was set in motion, these holes would be rotating around the planet during the period of time that CME is coming in. And so in a sense, it's...
Are you there?
Laser it with the high energy parts.
You just cut out for a second.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. I just hoping they weren't trying to cut you off again.
No, and I've actually got no indication that I'm being cracked at this point. All my ports are good.
Good deal.
So they still haven't found us. But in any event, the CME and the rotating magnetosphere can cause problems that may indeed trigger a magnetic pole shift. And a magnetic pole shift is dangerous not only because the whole magnetosphere inverts and is basically gone over half of the Earth at one time and then gone over the Earth, but it also allows all that radiation to come through, which will lead to all kinds of problems, not only communication-wise, but also on a personal level. Now, the magnetosphere has been increasingly weakened. At the same time, we're seeing the heliosphere and the heliopause, these giant magnetic bubbles around the sun, also be impacted. So basically, it's kind of like, let's all hope we don't get any CMEs for a few years until the magnetosphere builds up, or we're really in for it. And unfortunately, if we look again into history and look at archaeology, we find that there's a period of time that coincides with a lot of ancient legends that had all kinds of people living in caves because of extrasolar radiation coming in.
Yeah.
And they would stick a stick out of the cave to see if it was safe to go out at that point.
Well, we've just got so many things coming at once. It's craziness.
Yeah, there's that fellow, I've talked to him, a couple whistleblower guys, you know, that are interviewed on, like, Project Camelot and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to a couple of them. They contacted me and just wanted to chat and stuff. But from the black, or from the shadow world realm, they are very much aware that, and by they I mean at least the stuff that's been reported to me through these guys,
mm-hmm.
that the management of the shadow world is very much aware that we're being hit with all kinds of crap all at once.
Yeah.
And that it's not merely a perfect storm, it's a perfect storm of perfect storms.
Wow. What about two fugitives? What do you have to say about that?
I'm being really cagey about that because I got to watch the language because there are people mm-hmm. listening and these guys are still fugitives.
Yes.
But I've been actually contacted by, okay, let me see how I can say this and not get anybody into trouble. I've been contacted by a person who is in fact, or claims to be, a part of the pursuers, and they're really pissed.
Wow.
And they were basically, I don't know if it was a warning or that's kind of how I took it, but basically the guy was saying that, you know, if anybody mails me anything, you better send it back to us right away kind of thing. But we should see greater visibility of these guys in the November, December as we get into a lot of the alien stuff starting to appear. Mm-hmm. And by alien, I'm using it as a broad term to include, you know, the fundamental information that'll come out about the new electrics, which, by the way, may have occurred. So I may have been off by about 15 days because there's been a couple of articles that have come on out about a new form of magnetic battery and a new form of magnetic electricity.
Yeah.
And if these pan out, then these could be indeed the fundamental breakthroughs that power the new electrics. And if that's the case, then they're appearing in October instead of November, so I was off by about a month. But nonetheless, the guys that are the fugitives with their little device, we will see a denouement of that particular, the last act of that particular play by July of next year. Not even into July, so probably in June or so forth, and we'll see an increased level of visibility in November, so that if you sort of pay attention to what's out and about, even in the mainstream press, you should start seeing hints of this stuff from November, probably about the mid-November onward, somewhere in there, through to about July. And it should be pretty much out in the open, I think, in June or July of next year. Mm-hmm. We have a whole lot of secrets revealed that will come out in the early part of the year that will make it less of a big deal, so to speak. That, oh, okay, yeah, yet another alien vice has surfaced is going to be pretty much our attitude, I think.
Yeah. I'm also getting questions here. Number one, people want to know what's concerning you the most in all this, and the Obama assassination. What do you have to say about that?
Well, that's still, we still have those in the data. It still looks like that's a... probability at some level, at least the attempt. You know, it's best not to go too far into that. I think it's really stupid, and I don't really see. And actually, let me put it this way: any successful assassination attempt on a president these days, in a general sense, is undoubtedly the work of the another faction within the powers that be. In other words, it's a master punishing a errant slave. Mm-hmm. Because those presidents work for people, and they are well protected by people that are not, I would suspect, and I don't know this for a fact, but I would suspect that most of the Secret Service guys are just very narrowly focused, mm-hmm. very competent, and don't really concern themselves too much with the woo-woo world, and are not really aware that their boss, the guy they're trying to protect, is in fact a, you know, 28th layer down political minion. And so I don't see them as really being the Secret Service as being part and parcel of this, and so I'm sure they're doing just an excellent job. And thus, to get through that kind of excellence, it would take another level of excellence backed by a fairly large power base. So I don't buy the lone shooter kind of thing, right?
Probably.
There's a lot of nut jobs out there, but they don't usually express themselves this way. Usually they'll express themselves on targets of opportunity that are far closer to them. They'll go shoot up their local church. They're not going to drive halfway across the country and get really squirrely and learn the lay of the land and all of this in order to be able to kill a president. Mm-hmm. So if we see that kind of assassination attempt, I'm going to read it as the powers that be are starting to get a little bit desperate and are getting stupid and blatant.
Now, so what concerns you most with all this that's going on?
Living long enough to see it all come out.
I would have to agree with you there.
I'm interested. I'm fascinated. I can't help it. I grew up on all these science fiction stories. We're at the cusp of a huge level of change that, in our understanding of world history, this we've never been here before. Now, there indeed may have been other civilizations on the planet that made it to this stage before, but they never successfully transited. And so here is our turn. Will we make it or not?
Speaking of science fiction, you know, I'm a big fan of Star Wars, and you know, I've heard you talk about Alien Wars in 2011, and how it could be dominating our thoughts. Interplanetary wars. I mean, is this something that that's imminent and that's going to happen, or?
Well, the language is already starting to show up.
Right on.
You know, we've had NASA announce that they are going to bomb the evil Selenites on the moon for some kind of perceived fault. Really what they said was, we're going to go and look for water, but we're going to do it in a strange way by launching missiles at the moon. So, and they use the word bombing and so on. So that language is already starting to show. But good or bad or indifferent, our data suggests that the level of that language will be very dominating in 2011 and actually really starts... getting almost daily, I should suspect, in late November of 2010. So it's a 2011 issue, but because we work on a lunar year, our years really run a little bit different from the calendar years, and so 2011 will certainly be dominated by the alien wars, but we may indeed even see it a couple of months before 2011, starting sometime in late November 2010. And by alien wars, we're using those words at the largest level of archetype. Doesn't necessarily imply that you're going to get a gun and go shoot at aliens, or that they're going to be shooting back or anything. It may indeed end up being that way, but our data at this point, we can't tell if it's going to be that level of contention or some other level of contention. And it's very easy with our monkey minds to imagine all kinds of contention within humans and between humans and from humans to the ETs when the ETs show up. It's going to be a time of great stress, and curiously, we have a huge tipping point in 2011. Whoop. Have we lost?
No, I'm still here. I can hear you.
Okay, all right. I see what's going on. Hang on a second. I have to block a port. They know I'm using Skype, and they're trying to come in.
Great. How would you guys feel about maybe a 5 or 10 minute break here real fast? Do you need a break, Cliff?
Yeah, actually, well, I can use a break, but I have to feed the dogs and stuff, so maybe we should just go for another 10 minutes, and then because of the problems and stuff here, reschedule and do it again real soon?
That would be great. I'd love to do another interview with you, and we can get some more questions lined up in advance. Two things here let's be sure to cover in our time is Dog Poet, and let's go in a little bit more about the extraterrestrials, the aliens, and whatnot. I'm seeing a lot of stuff about that.
Yeah, that's rather fascinating. I mean, that's the big deal is the alien stuff. It's curious for me because I'm, you know, getting into the woo-woo world a few years back, and I wasn't really prepared for any of this. You know, I was just a software engineer, right? A cube-farmed human. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing a few things which led me to my current path. And along the process, I come and I start talking to people. And it's just really strange for me to run across these people that used to work into the establishment and to find out that, oh, yeah, the alien issue, extraterrestrials, contact, however you want to phrase it, is the single number one item on all the administration's efforts since Reagan or even earlier, and probably way back into Eisenhower. And it just doesn't show up to us guys out and about because they're doing all of the hiding for it from us. What was the other subject? Sorry?
No, let's see. I've got a whole bunch of them coming through here.
No, but you mentioned two...
Dog poet.
Oh, the dog poet. Yeah, there's a bunch of people actually that have picked up on that idea because it sounds good, you know, the canine lyricist and the dog poet, and they're claiming to be such. Our data seems to suggest it's actually this reggae singer in Africa. And I say that because there was a certain amount of language around the suffering that this person would endure on behalf of the children that were in his local environment. And indeed, this particular reggae singer is he's a champion of the downtrodden, displaced orphan community all through Africa, and he's gone to jail for his beliefs.
Wow.
So he's starting to show up with some of those suffering words and everything. He's at maybe 22-23% of fulfillment of the language. What we're waiting for is the Sirius song, and I'm just using a...
As in the planet or the star system?
Yeah, correct. As in the planet or the star system. That's what we're associating it with. It's just going to be a weird kind of phenomena. I don't think it'll go mainstream, and where it could be indeed a poetic kind of a deal, it does seem to, from our language, we've always described it as a song, and the words seem to imply that there is indeed a musical component to it, thus again pointing us back to this particular reggae singer out of Africa who has other attributes as well.
Mm-hmm.
But in any event, so we're waiting for this Sirius song because it'll be a truly phenomenal kind of a thing sweeping through the whole planet, and it will also be associated with the revolution going active, first here in the U.S., of course, and then later on globally. In other words, our data shows that the Sirius song will come out, say that this that the thing is actually produced and released in October of this year. We probably won't see it with any real clarity for the whole populace until it becomes used as, in essence, a revolutionary anthem. So at that point, then we'll know for sure that this is the guy. But we have some early clues that seem to suggest that the Sirius song, when it appears, we're actually actively looking for a language that should show up in it because it's a good key temporal marker. And again, I'm personally, I like reggae, and so I'm favoring this particular reggae singer, but he's less than 30% of the language, and so he could maybe morph into someone else that could grab a larger component of the language. But it'll, you know how you go on YouTube and you might look at a popular singer, I don't know who, just pick up a name, I'm terrible on that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you go look at their videos, and they might have, you know, 1 million or 2 million or even 15 or 20 million people that have looked at their videos over time. the Sirius guy, when that song comes out, it will dominate the YouTube and Daily Motion and these kind of places to the point that there might be literally thousands of uploads of the things occurring constantly, and will overwhelm the ability of the powers that be to scrub those services. Mm-hmm. And so the numbers won't be there. In other words, you wouldn't be able to go and look at this particular video from this particular singer relative to the Sirius song and see that it had 20 million hits. It might only show 5 or 10 or even 20,000, but it'll be because they're constantly trying to scrub the thing off the net. And that itself will become an open, not open secret, but kind of an open joke. Mm-hmm. That, oh, well, what's the Sirius song up to today? Well, hey, it's gotten 5 hits, and yesterday it was 15. That kind of a deal, right?
Right.
So it should be actually relatively exciting for us, because when that appears, within a month, you'll start seeing all hell break loose in the U.S. And it actually, whether it shows up for us in a general sense in December or not, when we expect it, in other words, it may show up and we might not even catch it, because there will be so much other stuff going on. And the chaos in the U.S. is certainly going to go on anyway. But whatever the song is, it will end up being a planetary anthem of a sort.
I'm going to have to check this guy out. I haven't really heard that much about him until I saw it here in chat, and then what you just said. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, and I'll dig up the guy's name. At the moment, I've forgotten it. I've actually corresponded with him and, you know, told him to basically watch out. If you're the guy, you got this kind of stuff coming down at you. And he was very receptive, so, you know, he didn't immediately say you're crazy. He was very polite. So anyway, we'll see. But the data for the dog poet is very strong. The individuals that are currently claiming that status perhaps need to be a little bit circumspect, because it won't be a good thing to be claiming that when the powers of the bee start getting really riled.
Wow. So let's see here. Let's take a scan here. Why don't you guys out there in chat pop in a keyword here if you got a specific thing. I've got so many coming through at once. I'm seeing earthquakes, earth changes.
Sure, let's go on that, and okay. Then let's call it a night after that.
All right.
Okay. The earth changes stuff here is going to be rather severe. We just stopped tracking earthquakes. Any big spectacular ones we'll certainly let people know about. But we're probably going to get to the point where there's multiple 7.0s a day, and it even becomes a subject of daily conversation as to how many 7.0s we've had that day. It'll all be leading up, we think, to the crack of the Pacific Plate, which will be a horrendous event. Mm. It'll be on the order of, say, 10 or 20 times the Banda Aceh in terms of the length of the plate that cracks, the amount of water that moves, and all of this. It may not yield as much devastation because of where the crack will happen relative to the population centers. When the Pacific Plate cracks, though, the places not to be will be any of the island areas. Rather, let me put it this way. It seems most likely to expect a larger impact on the southern Pacific islands, including the chains of the Philippines and into the New Hebrides and the Caledonian Islands all the way over to Fiji. They would seem to have a more immediate impact within that day of the plate cracking than any of the other areas immediately around it. But we do expect that the larger of the tsunamis will probably head towards Alaska. How far it will go from the South Pacific and how much damage it'll have is not predictable at this point. But the earth changes that we're seeing now are part of the whole solar system change. The whole solar system change, and I don't know if you've noticed, but like today there was some stuff on space weather and a few of the other sites about this odd ribbon they've found in the magnetic bands of the heliosphere.
Interesting.
Okay, the ribbon is kind of curious looking, and it has I can really go into that because there's so many analogs and a fractal nature of that ribbon and rotating energies in various different forms, that it's curious that they'd never discovered it before. And it begs the question, did it not exist before, or were we not looking for it before and couldn't find it? Mm-hmm. In either case, there's another question that I'm curious about, and that is, given that reality is fractal in nature, as above, so below, as within, so out, that kind of thing, but given that as a premise, it would make sense then to postulate such a ribbon along on the galactic level as well.
Wow.
And so here is the first sort of, I don't want to say it's evidence for our particular big squeeze theory, but it goes a little tiny ways towards supporting it, in the sense that we can say, oh, well, here's a strange ribbon in the magnetic underlayment of our solar system that they haven't really been able to describe or even get a handle on, and so it makes me think that our theory that there's a magnetic ribbon that of a similar nature that runs around the Milky Way galaxy that's what's currently causing our problems is at least a little bit more has a little bit more credence to it. If it's not believable, at least it's not. It can be say, oh yeah, you can discard it, but before you do, look, there's this strange ribbon around our solar system, and the odds are that there's probably a strange ribbon in the magnetic forces of any individual planet and all the way out to the galaxies. So those are part of the Earth changes. All of the strange stuff that's occurring on all of the various different planets. You know, we've had the weird thing with the elongation of the rings of Saturn that suggests that there's was a large body that passed by and warped out the rings. Well, that's one explanation, but another explanation is a magnetic distortion. And so our data has always pointed towards this idea of what we call the big squeeze. And I don't see anything at this point that says that squeeze is not continuing, and in fact, as the language actually materializes into reality, it seems to actually fill in a lot of the forecast language we'd had about the big squeeze. And that part is a little bit disturbing to everybody, in the sense that the implications of this squeeze could be quite tremendous. Maybe we're going to get squeezed in a slow way that's caused all these problems, and then if we were really lucky, maybe after we pass the peak of our solar system, passing the peak of that magnetic squeeze, maybe it would take 2 to 3 or 4 times as long to be unsqueezed, right?
Yeah.
And if that were the case, maybe it would settle down gradually. But I've actually got... let me back up, way back up, and I'll give you a bit of personal history here. When I first contacted George Ure to establish my bona fides, because he's a regular human trapped in his monkey mind, living in a regular world, and he gets contacted by this guy that says, I've got this screwy theory and some woo-woo stuff you need to pay attention to. And he was quite kind, and he did pay attention to it. And as a result of my initial contact with him, and to give him some idea of the stuff that had been hidden from him, I was telling him about some of the Sanskrit histories of the planet that I had read recently. This is back in 2000 or 2001. And one of the things I'd read was about this period of time in the Upper Harappan Valley, which is on the western side of the Notch of India, that this particular civilization, this is pre-Indian, or pre-Hindu civilization, a Harappan civilization, and before that. Anyway, there's some literature that was actually, I think it was written in Pali, not Sanskrit per se, but it doesn't matter. A similar language, and it was discussed a period of time where they had a 7.0 earthquake, and then everybody got their houses destroyed, they went out, made new bricks, and built their houses back up, and then 3 or 4 weeks later, there was another one. And it never happened before. And it just kept going on and on and on until they finally got to the point that they just lived in tents because they got tired of rebuilding the houses. And the language that I saw in those weird old Sanskrit documents, if you translated it into English and put it in our forecast, that's kind of what the forecasts are saying. That the shaking, the quivering nature of our planet is going to get to the point where it will affect all of us pretty much daily. And we'll just sort of get around it.
Awesome stuff. Awesome. We've covered so much tonight. My head is just spinning. It's amazing. You've got so much.
My vocal cords are starting to give out, so.
Okay, well, I guess we will call it a night. We want to thank you, Cliff, for all the great info. It's been an awesome interview. Regardless of the technical problems that both on your intruders and on our end. Like I said.
I have, by the way, 4 people or 4 ports being attacked at the moment.
Well, we're probably going to end this at a good time then. I'd really like to do another interview with you.
And, yeah, as soon as we can set it up. Yep.
And I'll compile some questions. Chris and Trev will probably get on that and get some questions. We'd love to hear from you again really soon, especially with this looming deadline coming up of the 25th.
Well, we should know a lot more about it on the 24th and the 25th itself. We should start seeing something come out in the language for that shift. And actually, the shift itself, from our viewpoint, the actual pinpoint hour is like 2 to 3 a.m. Pacific Coast time on the 25th, so it probably involves the Asian markets, since we think it's primarily a dollar thing. But yeah, certainly, let's get together and as close to that period of time as we can.
Okay, and we do appreciate it. Also, everybody, I think Greg2012, are you going to be reposting this interview as well? And also, we will have it... probably on the North Watch YouTube channel, and I will also be posting it on my channel, which is Light Essence 37. And I'll put a link to that in chat here shortly.
It'll be available all over the net. Thanks a lot, Cliff, for your time. I really appreciate all the inputs.
Well, I'm sorry about all the problems, guys. I guess we can figure next time, though.
It happens.
They're not problems. Remember that. They're challenges.
Challenges. Yes, right. There you go. Exactly so. Yes.
All right. We'll talk
soon.
That's
it. Throw my words back at me.
Well, thank you again, Cliff. We really, really appreciate your time.
Sure. No worries, guys.
Take care, brother.
Bye.